Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Break free from the forces holding you back. Get the life you deserve. Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, decrease depression, and start living your full potential. Thousands have used Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory, an evidence-based behavioral health breakthrough with incredible life-changing results. Getting rid of past trauma, having fulfilling relationships, increasing earnings, and living their best life. Now, the Fujian app is available to everyone. The app is Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory in the palm of your hand. Download the Fujian app today.
Do you wish to wake up one day and hit the life reset button? Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane, helps you navigate crucial life areas, heal the past traumas, and cultivate fulfilling relationships and careers. Life Reset is your guide to a profound journey to reshape your life. Grab your copy on Amazon or Audible now and embark on a path to a more joyous and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian podcast. And I'm your host, Dr. Fujian Zane, a psychotherapist, author, and the creator of the Awareness Integration Theory. I'm so thrilled to have you join us for what promises, and I promise you, to be an insightful discussion. In this episode, I chat with Dr. Stefano Sinicropi. He's a rising figure in the world of spinal surgery, renowned for his expert application of innovative spine surgery techniques. As a board-certified spinal surgeon, Dr. Sinicropi has dedicated his career to restoring his patients to pain-free life. Isn't that nice? A pain-free life, leveraging a proprietary diagnosis and treatment algorithm to provide tailored treatment plans. These plans often include minimally invasive spine surgery, total disc replacement, or complex spinal fusion, based on the patient's specific needs. Since joining the Midwest Spine and Brain Institute in 2006, Dr. Sinicropi has cultivated one of the busiest and most successful practices in the Midwest. His role expanded in 2012 when he was named the president and the CEO of the Institute, furthering its mission to provide the right diagnosis for the right treatment. Dr. Sinicropi's approach is deeply rooted in accurate diagnosis and personalized care, ensuring each patient's treatment is as effective as possible. With over 9,000 patients undergoing successful spinal procedures under his care, his reputation for offering real answers and alternative solutions to those who have been previously told there was none has made him a sought-after surgeon in Minnesota and beyond. His accolades include multiple top doctor awards from 2015 to 2023, a testament to his profound impact on the field of spinal surgery and patient care. Over the past 2 years, he's been embracing wellness and holistic methods of patient treatment, including gaining expertise in nutrition, diet, exercise, and biohacking methods. You got it, biohacking methods, and we're going to talk about it today. He is the founder of the Hypercharge Performance Longevity and Recovery Clinics in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, which plan to expand to 7 locations by early 2025, and will be rolling out franchises later in 2025 as well. He is the host of the podcast Wellness at the Speed of Light, which is a long-form video podcast featuring renowned guests that do discuss traditional, holistic, and cutting-edge treatments and discoveries in health and wellness. And I was a guest at his podcast, and we had an amazing conversation for, I think, almost 2 hours, and I hope you get to hear that too. He's passionate about helping to educate both the medical community and the public on strategies to halt and reverse the metabolic health crisis that is on the brink of collapsing the whole medical system. Dr. Sinicropi has begun work on his new book entitled The Diary of a Reformed Spine Surgeon, with plans to release them next year. You can get to know him more and all that he does at his website, sinicropispine.com. And definitely, you got to listen to his podcast. Check out Wellness at the Speed of Light podcast. We talk about everything, about personal how he was raised and what his way of getting raised had to do with him wanting to be more of a holistic doctor and a surgeon versus a very just specified. We talked about new biohacking and light therapy and transcranial biomodulation and photobiomodulation. And I think that you'll really enjoy. I really enjoy. I learn a lot and I hope you do the same. Now be sure to subscribe to my podcast, my YouTube channel, and connect with me through my website, fujianzeng.com, or any of my social media. Share your thoughts with me and I love to hear from you. So I think that's it. And without further ado, here's Dr. Stefano Sinigrappi.
Intentional Parenting, a practical guide to awareness integration theory, written by Dr. Jafari, Dr. Fujianzeng, and Dr. Manoukian, three experts in human development, is your step-by-step guide to raising a healthy child prepared for a culturally integrated world. You're supported in parenting infants to adolescents using the latest evidence-based scientific research on parenting. Order your copy on Amazon now.
Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, and decrease depression. Dr. Fujianzeng's awareness integration theory has helped thousands like you get incredible life-changing results. The Fujian app gives you her evidence-based treatment in the palm of your hand. Download today.
Well, welcome. It is such a great honor. I love to have you on my show, Dr. Stefano Sinigrappi. It is so nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. When you were on my show, it was one of the best conversations I've had with a human being in a long time. I tell everybody that I now have a therapist, which is great because I've never had a therapist before. But Dr. Fujian is my medicine. So glad to be here.
Everybody is going to say, "How come we're having a spine surgeon with us?" Because you started with spine surgery, but you have expanded yourself into a whole different realm, which I think is so important for all physicians to have that not only as a background, but also as a forefront and as a contextual aspect of what they do. So we're going to talk about all of that. But I think that the most important factor is who you are. You are adopted from Bronx and have been adopted by two amazing Italian parents. And it seems like that has had a lot to do with how your personality was built, where you look at things, why you look at things the way that you do. So can you share a little bit about your background and what got you to want to become a spine surgeon?
I mean, that's a great question. And thank you for asking me, because I think it's so important to kind of know who the people are. And that's what I love so much about doing a show myself. I was born in the Bronx. Interesting story where my birth mom was somebody that got pregnant up in Canada. And was a blonde hair, blue eyed, and you know the father, you know my natural father was black, and in those days, in those communities, it's a big no-no. We're talking, this is 1973. Having a black child in an Italian neighborhood or whatnot, it's a different time. Man, we've come so far to 2024 in some ways, right? And so anyway, I was adopted by this family. We always did the funny story is that my adopted father, just wonderful people, they've both since passed, but just wonderful, loving people. He said that when they went to pick me up from the nursery, so it was a little bit more dark than they thought I was going to be, but that wasn't it. It was just, they were just kind of looking at the nose and just saying, that's not the classic Roman nose we're used to. And we were expecting, cause you see this blonde hair, lady with light eyes, and then you see this baby, not what we're expecting. And obviously she didn't tell them any of that cause she didn't want those biases Canada play into that. But it's interesting because she could not have the child in her community. And I'm very thankful that she decided not to go a different route. Obviously, she actually, her entire pregnancy, she lived with my aunt down in the Bronx so that she could hide from her family, gave birth and was gone and took off. And so left me with these just wonderful people. And I could just tell you, I was so blessed being around the most loving, you know, Italian immigrants. You could absolutely imagine. They were so thrilled to have a child. I could have been purple, you know, with polka dots. They would have taken me in and loved me. And it's just amazing. I love telling that story. You know, something I haven't talked about a lot, you know, publicly, but I'm talking about it more and more because it's so important in shaping, you know, who I am. And so, you know, I always tell people, I mean, I'm as Italian as I am American because I grew up in a house. I mean, I went to school when I first started preschool at 4 years old. I hardly understood what anybody was saying because I spoke Italian. That was all that was spoken in the house. Now, my aunts and uncles who were also ethnic, like my close aunt who my biological mom, you know, lived with, she was Puerto Rican. So she spoke a bunch of Spanish and then her husband was Italian. So there's a lot of like non-English going on, even though they spoke English a lot in that household. That's the only English I knew. And so when I started school, I hardly knew how to speak. I was like an immigrant myself when I started school. It was a very an interesting thing. But the reason I like to talk about more my background now is because being in that ethnic environment and then having grown up in such an ethnic neighborhood where, yeah, it was mostly Italian, but there were so many different nationalities. And I was also in the Bronx where I was exposed to everybody, every religion, color, creed, everything. So I like to talk about, I mean, I've broken bread with almost every kind of box that we want to put people into, and they're all just boxes, whatever. We'll get into that in, you know, later potentially, but having that experience to appreciate how different cultures are, you know, among, but how similar they are, because we all want the same things, has allowed me really to be able to communicate and really have a close bond with people from all over the world, like just no matter where they come from, whether they're as American as apple pie, as we like to say, or somebody from Iran, right? To me, I don't see people like that. And I feel like it really helped me to shape the way that I look at people that are sitting in front of me that need help as me as a doctor. Now, going back, you know, one other thing I like to talk about my upbringing is that obviously being of mixed descent in a very Italian neighborhood in the 1970s, okay, it's a different time. I mean, people have to remember what was going on in the 1970s, right? How much racial violence was going on and all these things. There was a lot going on. So people had a very different mentality and mind frame. And so obviously I went through a lot of sort of emotionally traumatic events, okay? Nothing major where, you know, something horrible happened, but a lot of subtle and not so subtle kind of racism and things like that. But that really strengthened me to be able to then go so hard during my medical school and residency and as a surgeon. And honestly, comparing how difficult it was my training to how difficult it was growing up in an environment where you always had to kind of explain yourself and people were confused and there was just all these overtones, it just made me so much more resilient. And so I wouldn't take back my upbringing for anything. I mean, I don't even know who I would be if I grew up, you know, not in their household under, you know, the guise of that. And it's just, I take that all in and I just want to be myself. And that's what I'm going to be. When I was younger, I'll be honest. I mean, you're a psychiatrist. I always feel like I can tell you anything. Nobody gets this out of me other than you. I'm going to be honest with you. But when I was younger, I like to sort of, you know, kind of frame the story in a way because I always thought people would judge me because where I'm from and I would try to fit into certain different boxes. based on kind of who was I was around. It was like, you know, like when I was kind of finding, you know, more, okay, I would hang out with this community. I want to try to be more like them to be accepted, or this community or whatever. I mean, man, I'm so far past that now. I mean, I'm just going to be myself. And I think everyone needs to be their genuine selves. We are what we are, right? You're born, you open your eyes, and there you are. It's not, I didn't do this. I'm awake. I'm here. Here, hello world. Somebody tell me what is going on here. And then we go from there. So I wouldn't take it back for anything. On the last thing, sorry about the long winded. Your question was very broad, but when I eventually got through med school and I was in orthopedic surgery residency at Columbia, I fell in love with the spinal anatomy and the complexities of it. And I was thinking about doing some other things in orthopedic surgery. I liked hand and elbow and all this other stuff. I was so passionate so quickly once I was exposed to some of these amazing spine surgeons and went through some of the cases and things like that. So that was history after that. I mean, I made that determination. I've been passionate about it. And, you know, I've kind of gone down that direction and made a career out of it.
Beautiful. One thing that you said was interesting to me is that you actually were born into the context of the racism. Because where your mom held the concept of, I cannot be accepted because of this, and therefore I am going to have this child, however, I'm not going to associate. There is that you were born into that. And it seems like having such a loving parents, adopted parents, that it's, and even loving, you know, loving biological parent in one way, that she needed to make that decision, what's best for you, even though she had that dilemma, but allowing you to you know, not to fit into her dilemma, but to fit into a concept of love, which is the love of being different. So then you got so many other ways of being different, and then having that, you know, solid background of already coming from a difference, you know, and an Italian immigrant that are already coming knowing that they're different, and having to, you know, kind of like be resilient and survive and move forward. You know, you said this beautiful concept about how did I need to create who I was, because who I wasn't coming to me anymore from a solid background. Like you, if you come, okay, I'm Italian, I'm Iranian, I'm white, I'm this, I'm that, you know, I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
you come from this thing that, you know, you can just pick it up and say, okay, that's who I am, and I'm just going to follow that path. And yet you've come from a place of, I don't have any of these. And then yet I have to come up with who I am. I got to define it. I got to create it. And then yet this concept of even, you know, being adopted and knowing that you were adopted, there's always this, you know, belonging, a sense of belonging that I don't even know where I belong, not only for race, the language, the culture, the, you know, biological connection. And to create, like you said beautifully, like these cards were given to me. I didn't choose the original cards. It all showed up. But I looked at how I could, you know, play along and move along to create success for myself and in a positive way, in bringing it to me to create a life that I'm passionate about. You know, not a life that I'm resisting or I'm a victim of, but a life that I'm passionate about. And then I can share this passion with my patients, with my, you know, my podcast, and any conversation that I have. And I can bring that, you know, the path that I took, that although I didn't belong, that I create belonging in anywhere in the world. That if I didn't even belong to one race, I created this, you know, this concept of who I am, which is all of it. You know, I'm a connected based on being a human being and different cultures to people, and I yet beautifully independent and different in so many ways, and I can you know, celebrate the differences we all have.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you said it beautifully. I mean, you said it better than than I did, you know, myself. I think I with through everything I've been through, okay, and a lot of people don't know the side of me because I don't talk like this a lot. And the thing, one of the I just these artificial boxes that we want to put everybody into, it's some innate human thing where we want to just say it's us, and then it's you know, it's us versus them. It's like, oh, you look like this, so you're in that box, and you're in that box, or you're from here, or you're from that zip code, or whatnot. It's all artificial. We are all one, you know, big. I'm a very spiritual, you know, person, and so from a kind of a energy field, everything, we all have, you know, different, you know, religions. Some of us don't have, you know, whatever, but many of us come from different kind of religious traditions. And, you know, we use terms like God, and I like what Oprah does. And she's like, she talks about the source, right? And I just feel like we are all connected through this source. And so by going through all these different experiences that I went through, you know, I became more spiritual in a different way. I mean, I grew up hardcore Catholic. You could imagine that's another podcast. But anyway, you know, I've become more and more spiritual in a different way, really believing that we are all connected through similar. We all want the same stuff, right? We want to be happy. We want our, you know, both our ancestors, but also our children to be happy. We want to enjoy this thing that we don't have a clue what it is, right? Like I said, I love to say this. One day, right, you came out of the womb and your eyes opened. You have no, but we don't know, you know, what's going on. So trying to find your purpose and your sense in the world. You know, a lot of people struggle with it. A lot of people go to their grave without, you know, ever finding it. I'm just happy that even though some people would call like my early upbringing, I mean, people like one of my good friends, he would say, it's a mess. It's just because it's all over the, right? There's so many things going on, so many variables that things could have gone, you know, wrong. And thank God I wasn't wired to go down like a poor mental health pathway. Okay. Maybe I didn't have those genes or whatever, because I went through a lot of stuff that really affects people in very bad ways. And I was able to come through that just fine. But by finding myself, finding my place in the world, and just realizing I just love people. I love to connect kind of spiritually with people. I don't see people for their, you know, their outer being. Like when I'm looking at you, I'm almost, and this, I don't want people to think that I've gone, you know, off the deep end, but when I look at people, I more see their energy, their soul, who they are, their being. I don't sit there, oh, this person's that. I don't like the way she's dressing. Oh my God, those pants, you really wore those pants? Or, you know, I don't like these people because they, you know, whatever, they're from here or they're from this. So I am more, you know, like in tune with that. And I take that into my practice every day. And I really feel like just by having that energy level and by really loving people, I don't know how else to say that, when they come into my space and they're looking for a healer to get them better from whatever condition they have, I feel like they can sense that like my spirit wants to really touch their spirit and figure out how can I help you. And I like to completely disarm people, because honestly, some people are so self-conscious about themselves and how I'm going to view them. So whether they have mental health issues, whether they've had addiction before, whether they're obese, whether they're a different whatever religion or whatever, or they just don't fit in, or they're, you know, they're an immigrant that just came, you know, a month ago and just is not comfortable around Americans yet because they feel like I'm judging them. I like to disarm that right away. And I feel like just everything that my upbringing has done has just put me in a place where it's like, I feel like we all need to get post. We have to be like after the judgment, after the putting people in boxes. You know, if we all did this, do you know what kind of a world we would live in? It would be beautiful. Like it would just be nothing but tears and hugs all day. Then we could be happy. In other words, we want to box, we want to put people in these silos.
And medicine has done that too. And you, because of what's going on with you and what you have gone through and experienced, the environment and, you know, who you are genetically, what your body came with, and then yet what the environment did and that you had to deal with, it seems like you've also taken the path of this holistic concept into medicine, because medicine can be very, very boxed. You know, somebody yes. goes and becomes specialized, you know, you're a specialized spine surgeon, and people can become very specialized, and they don't see anything beyond it. And you become, as a patient, when you go into a doctor's office, you become the accumulation of the test results. So let me see what test we have. Mm-hmm. And based on these tests, this is what's going to be. And, you know, all the questions are around whatever issue you came in. And you've expanded yourself into this holistic lifestyle medicine to bring into your practice and utilize many other aspects. And I think it's so important because, and I'm going to link it at one point in our conversation to, you know, partially your job is to do a lot of surgery. After that, there's pain medication. Those pain medications can turn into addiction. And then, you know, then they come to me to get the rehabilitation. So the concept of you taking this lifestyle medicine and looking at all angles is so important to look at that. What got you to go from, you know, being a spine surgeon and your training in Colombia to start looking at, no, we're a little bit bigger than just the spine, although that's an important factor. But there's more of my patient and a human being that's in front of me that I got to look at and care for as a physician to be able to have that person kind of grow and take care of themselves, become responsible for her all of their life versus just their pain.
I mean, great question. It was a great segue from what we talked about before, and that is just having really being connected with people and seeing what they're going through. And so when I first started in my career, you know, the first 5 years, your focus is 100% honing your skills, right? Because you've got to get better. And the truth is you're not an expert at the beginning, and we all have to start somewhere. I'm sure that you went through a little bit of that. I go through that. I mean, you have to hone your skills before you are who, you know, I'm looking at today. That's just the way it works. And so at the beginning, it was really honing my skills and making sure that I was the best spine surgeon I could be. Then I morphed into another part of my career where I just wanted to really be on the cutting edge, get my surgery shorter, do all this stuff. But it was all really focused on that. And we are so busy as spine surgeons. There's so much pressure and stress that goes into that until that lessens a little bit by experience and being more confident in that people are going to get better. Even when you're dealing with some disaster, it definitely changes. So then you have a little bit more mental bandwidth. And so I started getting into looking and trying to help people with their diets and exercising and things like that. So it was just the periphery of it because I saw how sick people were. But then as I became, you know, really more mature in my practice, I started spending a lot more time going over how the patients actually got to the point where they were so ill. And it was so bothersome to me. It just kept gnawing at me. And I was talking to them and they were all wondering, why do you keep asking me about all my diabetes and all this other stuff and getting really into it and just asking them, well, who put you on this med? Why are you on 12 medicines? You're 37 years old. This is insane. And so at some point, I really started getting a little bit more into the wellness thing. And then I had a situation where my son had an injury. And then he was trying to rehab, and I met a guy that was very, very much into holistic kind of practices and things like that. And he started saying, you know what, you really have to look outside the box. I know you're doing the diet thing and the exercise thing, but there's so many other holistic practitioners out here and different aspects of things. And honestly, at the beginning, I was even resistant, and I'm a pretty open-minded guy. I don't know if I could be much more open-minded. And I just thought, nah, that's what other guys do. I don't do that. I'm a spine surgeon. It's going to make me look bad. All these weird things that we all have. That being said, so we eventually, he put me on to a lot of this other holistic stuff, and I didn't think I was going to go down there, but I did the research. I put my science geek hat on started reading everything I could get my hands on. And honest to God, I was blown out of the water by how much tremendous research there is on so many of these holistic health and wellness things. So this is about 2 years ago. And then I just decided, you know what? I want to really help people completely. I want to be a healer. I don't want to just fix their leg pain from their sciatica. I want to fix them in their totality. So I spent hours and hours and hours basically going back to school on my own and sat and read hardcore textbooks on basic science, neurology, dieting, everything. Like every stuff I would have never even considered doing, because that's not what we do. We're spine surgeons, and some of my colleagues, neurosurgeons, we just don't do that. And so it's been fun. After reading, learning, looking at the data, I thought to myself, oh my God, man, I need to reform myself, right? There needs to be a reformation here. Listen, I've learned a lot of great stuff. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. The people that have trained me are amazing, but they never told me about red light therapy. They never said, hey, you know what? When people are experiencing depression, you should maybe think about trying intermittent fasting or a ketogenic diet. I didn't know any of this stuff. Why would I know that? That's not our area. And so the more I learned about this stuff, my passion kept going. I'm the passion meter up, 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 up. And eventually it just led into me deciding that not only was I going to be a spine surgeon, but I was going to make myself absolutely a wellness expert, not because I read something on on social media and decide I'm going to come out here and talk about, you know, GLP-1s or whatever. I'm going to read everything I can get my hands on because I'm comfortable enough as a spine surgeon, and I'm going to become an expert in the wellness field and help people in their totality.
I want to hear about this biohacking modalities that you're so passionate about. I mean, the whole world of biohacking is important to open up. Can you unpack that for us and give us some idea about how is it and what does it do?
Okay, so that's awesome. So I love this word biohack. I mean, all it means is we're really hacking. We're using like shortcuts to get our biology healed. Right. And so if something's out there, and so people, unfortunately, in today's day and age, their hacking is a lot of pharmaceuticals, which have a list of side effects that we don't have to talk about. They see the commercials and the little print at the bottom. And there's a lot of procedures that we do, and some of them are life-saving, and some of them maybe we don't need to be doing, right? And that goes across all specialties, doing any type of procedures. And so what biohacking is, why it excites me, before I get into specifically the types of biohacking, is because unfortunately, and you know this in your practice, there's many people that despite what we do, even if they change their exercise regimen or try to change their nutrition or try to tweak this and that, especially people that have mental health issues and other chronic pain and other things, even with making lifestyle changes that I jump up and down about, and I'm all over LinkedIn talking about all the lifestyle stuff, sometimes it's not enough because of whatever factors, right? And so what biohacking can do is it can be sort of a convenient way of changing actually the way our cells work, the cellular structure, and it all goes, it'll go down to mitochondria, which I'll talk about in a minute. But what we're trying to do overall is jumpstart the good stuff and tamp down on the bad stuff. And so biohacking sometimes gets not a bad name, but it's very confusing for people because there are biohackers out here, but they are trying to live to 130, 140 years old. That's not what we're trying to do. I want people to live good, healthy lives. And so they get deep into the weeds on all this crazy stuff. And I know about it. I listen to their podcast, but for, Joe or Jane Q Public, they have no idea what those people are talking about. So biohacks are ways that we can alter the functioning of a structure in the body. So one of the things I'm most passionate about, and I've talked about this a lot on LinkedIn, I know we talked about it a little bit, on our episode is something called photobiomodulation. So for the lay public, they probably or may not have heard of something called red light therapy, because there's a lot out there now. How fascinating is it? Okay. It might not be as fascinating to you as it is for me. I mean, I'm kind of crazy about this stuff, but that we can literally shine light on cells, deep penetration into the body, and change the way the cells work. So we can actually have mitochondria that can produce energy, or ATP, that's the energy of the cell, adenosine triphosphate, at a much higher level. How about the fact that we can stimulate the cells to then send messages to the nucleus, okay, which is kind of like the, like, you know, the main computer, kind of the brain of the cell, and then create factors which then change their genetic kind of transmission to tell the cell to get healthy or to not die from using light, okay, which the FDA, so photobiomodulation or using light therapy, and we can really get into it if you'd like to get into really the weeds, but the FDA has deemed photomodulation as having non-significant risk, okay? That's a big deal. So now we are looking at therapies that potentially can be absolute game changers for so many conditions, okay? I don't want to sound like a snake oil salesman, but people can do their own research and they'll be blown away with something that is so safe. It's light. It's fascinating.
Well, I just want to unpack this a little bit.
Sure.
So we used light therapy for depression before, but that light therapy was just allowing light to be in an environment that you were. Then I saw, actually in the last Evolution of Psychotherapy conference, there were glasses that you would put on and it would have different lights. And through that, it would change the frequency of the brain, which had, again, depression, anxiety, insomnia, OCD, obsessive thinking, all of those would be helping. And then obviously would help addiction, because addiction would have the component of all of those, you know, the obsessive thinking and the depression and anxiety in there. But what you're talking about is even more than that. It's more like it's transcranial. So there's a difference in what you're sharing with us. Can you share a little bit more about how this thing works?
Yeah, that's great. So there is, so generally when we talk about, so there's different light therapies. You're absolutely right. So you want to look at the different, you know, spectrums, okay? And so the three light colors that we are looking at. So there's blue light therapy. We all hear the bad stuff about blue light, but blue light is used by dermatologists and by other people for skin conditions. So blue light can be very helpful. It's not great to be looking at blue light, because then it gets us all, and we look at blue light all the time anyway. So that's why we use these blue light glasses when we want to kind of relax. There's green light therapy, which no one knows about. I put out a post and everybody was like, "What is green light? This is crazy. What, you know, what's going on with this?" You know, stuff. And that's kind of they're in different wavelengths, but that's the visible wavelength. And green light's great because it's absorbed by hemoglobin and oxyhemoglobin. And it actually also penetrates the eyeball and creates certain messages in the brain that releases our body's natural endorphins. We are in the very, very infancy of green light therapy, but it's something we are offering, and some people are having like amazing results. And University of Arizona is doing tremendous studies on green light, and they're looking at fibromyalgia, which they had positive studies, migraine, and now they're doing one on just reducing pain medicines after surgery using green light therapy. It's amazing, and they got a huge grant for that, by the way. So I'm very excited. I can't wait till that study comes back, because I'd like to talk about that with the audience.
Parenthesis right here is that, could that also be why we feel so amazing in nature and green nature and leaf, because it's automatically we're getting that kind, or we don't know? That's just,
I think that's a different concept, because you need the irradiance or the power of the light to really penetrate. And that's where these fancy, very expensive machines come in that can actually provide enough power to get you enough light. In the red light spectrum, though, it's very interesting, because there's the red light spectrum And then there's a higher wavelengths, which is called near infrared. Okay. Red light is helpful for a lot of things. The problem with just straight red light is it doesn't penetrate. It only penetrates down into the beginning of the fat layers. Okay. So you're not getting the deep penetration. The beauty about near infrared light. Okay. And that's the kind of in the 800s is where the most popular, but we use all kinds of wavelengths, but the near infrared can penetrate things like the skull. Okay. So it's very, very important. And that light, actually red and near infrared are both, but it's the near infrared that's going to penetrate. So if you can penetrate deeply into either the body, because we can do whole body red light therapy or specific locations with laser therapy, but then transcranial red light therapy, which is one of the things that I think is most relevant to you, you know, in your field, but has the potential for transcranial red light therapy is nothing short of, I couldn't be more excited about it. And the guys out of Harvard are doing an amazing job, like looking at some of this stuff. But so you shine these near infrared rays into the skull. It will penetrate the skull and get actually into the mostly the outer layers of the brain tissue, the gray matter. But the real important thing is that when the light gets in there, it's absorbed by the mitochondria in the neurons, and the mitochondria are most numerous actually in the brain. And so they are immediately stimulated to produce more energy and can create repair of brain cells. And it's the fascinating research. And so it's been researched now. So TBI concussion has excellent studies. There's a randomized controlled study out of Harvard, which 2021, everybody should know that study that is in the medical field, and no one knows it, unfortunately, but they should. There's studies on post stroke. Okay. And a lot more work needs to be done on that. There's studies on depression with excellent clinical results, but again, early PTSD, anxiety, all kinds of other things like, you know, ADHD and things like that. But what's even interesting, and I think your listeners would find this of interest, is they are now doing numerous studies that are in progress. And they've had some good preliminary results where if you just shine the light on the frontal cortex, okay, that you can actually improve somebody's IQ and you can improve their ability to perform tasks. And so where is this important? I actually just read a chapter on an airplane yesterday because I'm just getting through this huge textbook on photobiomodulation of the brain. And there was a chapter specifically on treating elderly population without Alzheimer's or other dementias with transcranial stimulation to prevent them from having the senescence of old age. And we know that it's the frontal cortex that is primarily affected as we get older. And you could look at blood flow studies, you can look at MRIs of the brain, you could look at everything like that. The activity in the frontal cortex starts coming down and you can stimulate that and reinvigorate that. So they've shown both on functional MRIs and on flow studies, brain flow studies, an improvement in the functioning of the brain. And that translates into actually patients being able to have better recall, being able to do tasks better, being able to do all these other things. So just imagine in the future, at all points in our lives, but especially as we age, we do all this transcranial, you know, red light therapy and maintain ourselves as we want to be.
So there has to be obviously brain mapping before that, right? Because, you know, you want to know where you're sending the light, right? And then it's almost like the beginning is the similar as the transcranial electromagnetic stimulation. It's
yes.
Just instead of the electromagnetic stimulation, we're doing the light.
I was going to say that is a great, you almost read my, I don't know, you just kind of read my mind. It's amazing. So brain mapping, right? Or depending on how you do it, right? There's different ways to do brain mapping. The cheapest way to do brain mapping, right, is just functional, you know, EEGs, that kind of stuff. That might not be as specific as you're just looking at potentials and the five different, you know, whatever, waves and things like that. interestingly enough, a lot of the light research that has been done has not mapped the brain initially. It has gone kind of the other way, you know, from my interpretation. It's like, for example, when they looked at these patients that, you know, have Alzheimer's disease and things like that, they know where a lot of that, you know, a lot of the dysfunction is coming from. And so they're just targeting those areas and getting results. In fact, in that same book, this photobiomodulation of the brain, it's the Bible of that space, they talk specifically about, there's an entire chapter dedicated to, should we need to be combining brain mapping with where we're targeting the light. Right now, we're diffusely targeting it primarily at the frontal lobes, but we don't really know, what if you are targeting the frontal lobes, the temporal, occipital, everything at one time, does that give you better? A lot of this stuff hasn't really been done, but I think that brain mapping is definitely going to give us a lot of indications of what works better. Like I said, there's flow studies, there's stuff. Everybody's kind of doing something different right now. And I will say that the thing that everyone is frustrated about is, I think that the general sense is, oh my gosh, this stuff can be like unbelievable, because in the small trials that have gone on, it's incredible. And I know we've had a lot of, you know, now experience with people that have post-concussion. Transcranial red light therapy has been, I mean, I've seen people go from just disasters to infinitely better. Like, it's unbelievable, you know, what they have, and their depression symptoms and their anxiety and everything goes on. But the one thing I just want to say from a scientific standpoint is, it's frustrating, because if this university is doing a study at this intensity and radiance and looking at it with flow studies, and these guys are doing it with trying to brain map and doing, you know, EEGs, and this other group decides they want to use functional MRIs, and other groups are just doing it and just seeing what happens, there is no standardization as far as intensity levels or what's penetrating. And there's such a difference between what's called the class one device, which would be like a helmet device. And I mean, it's really, really low level intensity, and a class four laser, which many studies are using. And that's actually what we use in our wellness centers, where you're getting a lot more intensity of light. How do you standardize all that? All we know, and the way we've done it, okay, based on this frustration, is we had the data that was done on a lot of athletes that are concussed and things like that. And so that way has been paved. Some of the stuff is not even published. It's like posters and things like that, but we know the protocol. And so we've been using that protocol. It's extremely safe and people are getting excellent results from it, but there's got to be a lot more global, widespread, you know, data points where we look at 10,000 people with TBI and always give them, and just say, you're going to do this dose for this group, this dose for this group, and then this is the sham group, whatever. It's hard to do that. But again, like, great institutions are doing these studies, and I could not be more excited about it. But in photobiomodulation in general, like whole body red light therapy, it's absolutely FDA approved for musculoskeletal pain. Pain is a huge problem in our society. And again, it's insignificant risk is just how they say it. Okay. But the big thing is that there are so many studies on whole body photobiomodulation and improvements in things like anxiety, depression, energy levels, you name it. Okay. And that's why it's difficult. You know, that's why, as I'm trying to get the message out on these things that people might know about, I really want to be careful to give those caveats that this particular thing has been studied extensively. This is early in its infancy, because that's the way we need to talk. Obviously, as physicians, we do a lot of stuff off label because we're just trying to help people. And if it's safe and you're seeing efficaciousness, it's different. I'm not saying, hey, I'm going to send you to my buddy to put in a deep brain stimulator or put in all these probes in you. That's very different to, hey, go to this clinic and get light shown on your head for 6 to 10 minutes a day. It's just so, you know, it's such an easy thing to do and look at, but the photobiomodulation is absolutely the future And it will be incorporated in every nook and cranny in how we treat patients in the future. This I'm 100% sure of. I just don't know if that's in 5 years or 20, but I'm hoping it's soon. And I hope that to be part of the solution to get the information out on things like this. And I'm happy to talk to you about other, you know, modalities based on time.
Well, our time is, we've already passed through, but I'm so excited when you shared about the pain, because I do think that a lot of people, find themselves in physical pain and then tolerance or the lack of tolerance of the physical pain not only gets them depressed, but also into utilizing opioids. And then from there,
yes,
you know, then the whole life changes, personality changes, you know, addiction and overdose. So I am so excited about this factor that this could really minimize or alleviate the experience of pain with the device you're talking about. Now, because we're running out of time, and I'd love to have you back on our show, you know, to extensively talk about this. Anyway, is there anything we haven't talked about now that you around the conversations that we've had that you really want people to know and we didn't get to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the one thing I'd like to just tell people that are watching this show and that are finding us, however they're finding us, is how important it is to be the CEO of your own healthcare. And that is only going to happen if you really find a way to learn as much as you can about your own health and wellness and rely on true experts in those fields to get your non-biased information, where people are not trying to pull the puppet strings on whoever to provide a certain message. So I really want people to be understanding that if they are not the advocates of their own healthcare, they may get shuttled down very dark pathways, very dark silos, and then end up finding that person that might help you, but it might be 3 years later and you might have no job and your life is ruined and you have chronic pain and you have all these, you know, other horrible things, and it's very difficult to deal with, especially within the addiction, you know, kind of realm. And then the second thing I think that I'd like patients to understand is that we use words like alternative modalities for things like photobiomodulation, pulsed electromagnetic frequency, structured water therapy, oxygen therapy, and all these other things that I've become a big proponent of because the studies are there and they are incredible. And so I think we need to just kind of ditch the word alternative and it's just another treatment, right? It's just alternative. It's, to me, many of the medications we use, those should be labeled as alternative therapies because their side effect profiles are frightening. And people shouldn't be put on those things unless it's absolutely the last resort. And so I couldn't be more excited. I just want to educate people. I want people to just know that there are people out there that care about them and want to make their health as good as it can be. Because if you don't have your health, their wealth is useless. Health is wealth. And I really want to I want to just shout it from the top of a tall building that everything else is meaningless. If you don't feel well, you just can't be present. You can't enjoy this beautiful thing that we've, you know, beautiful thing called life that we've been given. And so, thank you for giving me the opportunity for being on the show. And obviously we need to do like three or four more of these so we can talk about the other stuff that we need. I got to have you back on my show. People loved it. So
about the transcranial photobiomodulation, are there particular places in the United States that people can go? Are there your center does it, or if they're not, you know, in Minnesota and the different places, do you have any idea where people, if they're interested in knowing more about it or learning, if they wanted to test it and try it, where should they go?
Yeah, so I think that the I think that the preeminent folks in transcranial light therapy are for sure at Massachusetts General Hospital out of Harvard. So I would ask people to go and just put in, you know, Harvard red light therapy, you know, clinic. I mean, they are pioneers. They're writing all these books, you know, that I'm reading. I mean, they are the pioneers in the field. So I would look at some of that stuff. And if they're interested in getting into some of these, randomized controlled studies, if they've got some really serious stuff going on and they just have nowhere to turn. Other than that, you know, our clinic Hypercharge here, you know, our clinics, Hypercharge clinics in Minnesota, we do some of this transcranial, you know, therapies. Again, it's off label because it's not FDA approved, but obviously as a physician and my partner, who is a physical medicine rehabilitation specialist, we are very confident that it's safe. I mean, there's a couple things that, you know, if people are on antipsychotics and some other things, we don't like to do it in that setting. But other than that, it's extremely, extremely safe. And we treated a lot of people. But otherwise, because it's such a tiny, tiny fraction of providers are even offering anything like this, they really have to go online and see if there's anything local that they can find, or practitioners that believe in some of this stuff. But the potential, like I said, for transcranial light therapy, it's mind-boggling, and I think it's going to help us in our fight against the opioid crisis and our mental health crisis and the neurodegenerative. We didn't even get into what the studies are, the preliminary studies show for Alzheimer's and for Parkinson's disease. There are some stunning work being done out there, and I look forward to seeing larger studies on that, because, man, if we can change things with light, I mean, it's great. It's been given to us. This is our world. They gave us light. Let's use it.
Where can people find you?
Yeah. So thanks. So they, they can look at my website, which is synecropyspine.com. If they're interested in learning more about my spine practice and things like that, our clinics, it's Hypercharge Clinic. .com. We have some centers here in Minnesota. We plan to expand broadly across the country over the next couple of years. And we're just excited about doing this. And the primary place where you'll find me, if you want to just get to know me a little bit better, is without question on LinkedIn. And so they can just look me up and they'll find me on my LinkedIn profile. And just love being on LinkedIn. It's a blast.
And your podcast?
Podcast is a Wellness at the Speed of Light. It's on all the major, you know, channels, and love doing this. Please check out the episode I did with Dr. Fujian. That was an excellent episode. That's definitely one of my favorites. That was an amazing time we spent together. And I think everybody should watch that. So yeah, you could just find this on any of the usual channels.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And I really look forward to future conversations.
Absolutely.
And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.
Are you a psychotherapist looking to enhance your practice? The Awareness Integration Therapy developed by Dr. Fujian Zeng is a comprehensive guide to the principles and techniques of this powerful therapeutic approach. Join the growing community who have elevated their practice and expanded their skills by embracing Awareness Integration Therapy and witnessing its life-changing impact. Order your copy on Amazon now.